Welcome to another episode of Go, Go, Grow podcast. I am so excited to welcome Kelly Olson. She is the founder and CEO of KO Nose Consulting, and she is focused on one of the most important pillars of building your pillars for success for your business. And it's actually often one of the most overlooked pillars. So let me kind of do an introduction for you, and then I'm going to let her do her custom introduction as well. So what Kelly does, she is a, I'm going to actually make sure I get this right. She is a customer growth and retention consultant. What she does, she helps founders, CEOs, business leaders that are growing tech startups, different agencies, professional services firms. So if you think along the lines of primarily service organizations, focusing on your most valuable asset, and that's your customers. Your customers are what generates your revenue and really sustains your business. That's what you've got to scale in order to scale your organization. So what she does is she makes sure that you have an efficient, effective, and scalable post-sales customer experience. You want to make that a revenue center, not a cost center. You want it to be scalable with your business. So Kelly, can you tell us a little bit about anything that I've missed in the introduction there, and kind of why you're focusing on this particular area of the scalable process?
Yeah, no, that's a great introduction, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
I think from my perspective, we really need to be thinking about how we curate our customer's journey once they become a customer. We spend so much time across the go-to-market team trying to really schedule and create that sales cycle for a prospect, right? And we have our marketers who are very data-driven and wanting to actually figure out how to get your brand into market. We've got the sales team and the marketing team working together to create that demand. And then what happens when someone actually becomes a customer at your firm or at your organization? Do you pay less attention to them, or do we need to pay more attention to them? So really, this is an extension of that entire customer life cycle, so that we're leveraging as much of our client or customer relationships as we can to continue to grow and retain that revenue over their life cycle. So my focus is very much on working with founders and CEOs to create those processes for their customers that they might not have already. So if you're a growing organization, you get really excited about closing those deals and ringing the gong, right? And then what happens when you've rung the gong and everybody's celebration is over? The hard work begins, right? You've got to figure out a way to establish and cement that relationship during the onboarding process, no matter what your product or service is, right? You've got to figure out how you repeat that process over and over so that your customers understand what's going to happen next, and that your team helps them to achieve their outcomes. There's a reason that they bought from you in the first place. If you're not front-loading that relationship and proving the value very early in that relationship, I've seen estimates out there in the market that customers expect to see value within 30 days in some cases, wow, and at the very maximum 6 months. You've got a very short window.
Especially for tech firms.
Yes. I mean, if you're a SaaS platform, your customer has to be out there with his or her manager or decision maker, and you've got to be showing them the value that you have provided within weeks. Months or quarters is really not an option. In some of the services-based businesses, that's certainly going to be a little bit longer tail cycle. But the bottom line is, figure out for your business how quickly we need to be demonstrating value, and then start to script a journey that has actual touch points that are curated and proactive so that you're delivering to your customer before they know they need something. That's the goal.
And you know, that brings up an interesting point. And of course, in addition to GoGo Grow, my background is in the heavily in the sales and marketing side, but my company is Revenue Chaser. So it's that whole revenue ecosystem. And so often a company will say, okay, we made the sale. Implementation, customer service, customer support, Right. Go take care of the customer.
Bye.
Exactly. And it's a baton handoff, and it can't be. They've got to walk that journey together side by side with the customer. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, we talk a lot about it being a handhold. You know, it can't, no surprises is always my goal, right? And I think that you've been in this game long enough, and so have I, that, you know, you don't ever want a seller to surprise you when you're working on a customer onboarding call or a customer implementation call, depending on how complex your product or service is. This is no longer a situation where we wait and see what a customer needs. It's very much to understand the intelligence up front and have a team that's ready to handhold through that transition so that we can be very clear on why our customer is here with us and what their goals are. You know, you need to understand on the post-sales journey, how does your customer make money and how does what you're doing in this relationship and this purchase support that?
And how are they actually using your product or service? Because what they're doing at the implementation standpoint, it may evolve. Of course, their needs evolve. Their utilization of your product may evolve. And when that utilization changes, if you're not integrated with that client and their needs change, their solution has to change.
Yeah, I think that it's about, I mean, you're in a very unique position post-sales to be able to bring back a lot of intelligence and data into your business, right? So if you're not taking advantage of the post-sales process for looking at, you know, I'll say product adoption and usage and target roles that are using your product, taking that data and information back into your product team for feature development, for future product development, you know, that post-sales team is an absolute expert on what's going on with your customer and able to help you as an organization commercialize new product offerings, right? And then understand how can you expand into other roles within the organization? So I'm sure you're familiar with buying committees or buying groups, right? We've seen that just proliferate in the last few years. And if you think about all the folks that are on your buying group, they're influencers around the organization. They might be some users, you know, some economic buyers, some executive influencers. You've certainly got a financial gatekeeper somewhere in there. All of those folks need to understand very directly how your product or service is impacting them. What is the ROI of working with you as a partner? And that's what a really great post-sales process aims to show you. You want your customer to have a great experience, but on the flip side, your team needs to be able to document predictable revenue and bring data and feedback from the customer into the business.
Right. Now, every chance I have, whether it's on the podcast, whether it's on a LinkedIn page or my office hours, I drill home 2 points, and you just touched on them, and I'm going to hammer it home again. First of all, throughout the company, your company that you're trying to scale, you need to have a common source of truth. If sales is using one database to sell the customer and customer success is using another database to service the customer and they don't talk to each other, you're shooting yourself in the foot. Use a good CRM or whatever system you're using that's serving that purpose. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways that we can equip our post-sales team with the information that they need and then continue to automate and make their jobs easier, right? Mm-hmm. So my goal in post-sales is to really think about that prescriptive client journey and start to understand which parts of that need to be human driven and which parts can be automated. And if you are utilizing and maximizing your CRM, you're going to be so much more successful at that. So there's things that we do pre-sales, right? We automate outreach sequences. You know, we need to do those same things post-sales, but then also be pulling other data in. So organizations, you know, if whether you're just using a CRM and standing up a post-sales function for the first time, you know, think about all the different places that you might have data across your organization and think about right. where the best place to house that centrally is, to your point, right? I'm working with a client right now where we're really doing a CRM optimization and the sales leader and I are holding hands throughout the whole thing, right? Because
as you should.
We need to get it right from the very first prospect touch point right. all the way through retention and growth. It's a circle, not a straight line, right? It's not a funnel. It's not a straight line. It's really just that circle of growth, right? Yeah. Whatever visual, you know, you use. But when you're thinking about lifetime value with a customer, that's what your post-sales function is for. And it should be generating revenue for you.
I want to touch on that too.
Yeah.
But let me hit that second point. If
yeah,
you
yeah, yeah. Go.
Okay. So we have the common source of data and yep. everybody has access to it. But the other thing you need to do, you have product designers, product marketers, the executives, everybody, including customer success, needs to have a seat at the table when you're doing strategic planning, revisiting things like your vision, your five-year plan. Allocation of resources. Everyone needs a seat at the table.
Yeah. It's about the kind of the North Star aspect of planning and the way that you're strategically running, you know, your company, right? And putting the customer at the center is something that we all say, but it's probably the hardest thing to do, right? And the continual sort of return to the customer's needs. And I think the goal is, particularly your post-sales team, how are you taking all of that information that you're gathering post-sales and feeding that back through the company? So there's systematic ways that you do that. And then there's sort of like more, I would say it's a difference between quantitative and qualitative ways, right?
Right.
And those quantitative ways need to go specific places, probably to a finance function, to a product development team function, also to a support team function, right? So your post-sales team is answering lots of FAQs and questions, and you've got to be filtering a lot of that to your support team as well. But then there's the more qualitative ways or like the more casual ways that I like to think about it. You know, how is your post-sales team featuring the voice of the customer within your all hands meeting? You know, how are they bringing really fun recordings with clients, you know, client meeting recording snippets right. and sharing those through the company? How are they sharing client success stories, even on your Slack channel, right? You know, you're already celebrating a closed one deal with the gong on your Slack channel. So why not think about those ways? So there's the obvious ways of like very systematic, you know, data-driven ways, which are super important to have those processes. And then there's the other ways that your post-sales team is just really keeping the customer at the center of your process. Because if you're not doing that, very likely the other departments within your organization are kind of going off and doing the things that they think they need to be right. working on.
Right. Well, earlier you mentioned it should be a revenue center. And of course, that's another one of my mantras. So let's look at when did it change from this is costing us money to this could make us money. So let's go back to, oh my gosh, 45 years ago, back in the late 80s, early 90s. When companies said, you know what, this is a cost center. It's costing us money to serve these customers who, right. by the way, are giving us money. We're going to offshore this.
Yeah.
And they did it for financial reasons and for streamlining things. And some customers tolerated it. In some ways it helped because it gave 24/7 support. It allowed companies to serve markets that otherwise they may not be able to do so, but it also created a lot of problems.
Yeah, so, I think, go ahead.
No, so I was kind of looking for your feedback on what do you think the tipping point was that businesses said, maybe we need to look at this as not a cost center. We might be damaging relationships. And what can we do to help generate more revenue from our customers, treat them as that valuable asset that we talked about, and turn it into a revenue center, a relationship center?
Yeah, I think it's almost an evolution of the customer and a much more savvy, tuned in customer as well, who demands more, right? I think it's kind of that more for less mentality in general that we've all kind of fought against. But I think it's about the service providers also saying, we actually need to proactively anticipate what our customers need. And we can't just have a customer service type of a function. We need to develop a strategic function within the organization that knows our product or service inside and out,
yes,
that understands our customers. So, you know, you talk a lot about consultative selling on the front end, right, with your sellers. We need to have kind of that same approach post-sales, whether that's a really highly trained and expert implementation team, or whether that's a success team as well. But depending on the industry, I think you definitely saw that inflection point in SaaS creating the term customer success, right? Customer success didn't exist before SaaS. I came from the marketing agency world. I was an account leader at a marketing agency. I transitioned to the SaaS world and suddenly my job was called customer success. But the difference is that we need to be thinking about post-sales as growth. And that's a really critical call out, because if we're thinking about how we could do more with less, then the strategic post-sales function needs to help us increase customer lifetime value. And I think at the end of the day, it also comes from a scarcity perspective too, right? On the go-to-market side of the business, what is the other pressure? We want to increase lifetime value and we want to decrease customer acquisition cost. And so those two things end up coming together in post-sales, because we need to be as growth-minded as we can. Once we've captured that customer, it costs five times more,
right,
to acquire a new customer, depending on your industry, that could vary wildly. But it costs five times more to acquire a new customer than simply to do a great job and hold on to the customer that you already have.
So sticking with that software niche, that software industry, think about like the late 90s, mid to late 90s. If you were a small to mid-sized company and you wanted a relational database, this was kind of before they called it a CRM.
Sure.
You could buy off-the-shelf software. I mean, you had Goldmine, you had Access, you had Act. You know, you could buy any of those.
Sure.
And it would serve your needs. And you could use it for 10 years. If your needs changed, yeah, you might want to look at somebody else. But you didn't, I mean, it was a purchase and done type of thing.
Right.
Today, the industry has changed. The service model has changed. It is an MRR or ARR model.
Yes. Everything is a subscription across our personal and professional lives, right? Mm-hmm. We're subscribing to everything from streaming channels to software platforms at work, right? Uh-huh. And I think that that model, you know, changed our lives forever, right? And I think that it also up-leveled the need to support customers in a different way. There's no nonchalance about onboarding a new customer, if there ever was, right? Mm-hmm. It is an absolutely critical time to get the relationship right and really front load those relationships so that your customer is solidified in that first, let's call it 30, 60, 90 days, depending on, you know, the product or service we're talking about. And that means that we also need to think about how we deepen those connections and retain those customers. But I think even now, retention isn't enough. I think it's really about growing them, right? Like, you don't want to just retain your marriage, right? Like, I always use that analogy. Like, you don't want to just be like, okay, like, you want to be great. You want to deepen that connection. And
right,
we need to think about it as, how does the post-sales team contribute that incremental expansion revenue, especially when we're looking at, you know, what might happen in the future in our economy, right? Who knows where we're going to be a year from now or 2 years from now?
And you know, there's going to be
to those.
It, you know, there's going to be additional competitors come on the scene.
Always. It's so easy to open a business, start a, yeah, you know, offer a software solution or become an agency or a professional services firm. Right.
Barriers to entry are so low in most every industry. Think about flipping over to the consumer side. Think about television options. It used to be you wanted TV and you didn't want, over the air antenna. You got cable and then satellite came available and then streaming came available. And now if you don't like one, you can end your contract, call another one, go with them for a month, and then go back to the other one, get a better deal.
Instantaneous, like instant gratification, number one, right? And that's a statement in the business world and, you know, in your personal choices of subscriptions, right?
Right.
And I think that the subscription world has then sort of, like I said, you know, very much impacted our personal views as well and what we would expect from vendors in a business relationship. And the competition really makes it so that, you know, nothing is for certain forever, right? And you have a renewal date on that contract and the clock is ticking from the minute that gets signed. You know, how will we demonstrate that you achieve your outcomes with our product or service? We need to be feeding that to our customers and scripting that for them so that we can continue to hammer home those points.
Absolutely right. And keep in mind, every single business customer is also a consumer customer, and they have expectations on both sides.
Yes. I think that's a very, you know, we have very savvy customers across the board. And we need to, you know, one of the things as a customer success leader that I told my team over and over was, how does your customer make money? We need to know exactly how our customers make money so that we can continue to give them ways to use our product or service better for more return and find out who else in the organization can also benefit from the relationship with us, right? And I think smart brands understand that, particularly with the downturn lurking, if you will, that it's far cheaper to retain your customers and then think about how you can actually grow them with additional products or services as you're retaining them.
Absolutely. Well, I think we've really hit on the financial impacts, negative and positive.
No kidding, right?
You know, cost or revenue of a very proactive customer success strategy.
Right.
And speaking of strategies, you've shared with me very comprehensive, well thought out strategies, Kelly's success strategies.
Right.
And I would love if you would talk about some of those, and we'll put that up on the screen as well. But if you could talk about some of those, and of course, we will include that when we post the podcast so people can access that as a resource. So can you talk through that a little bit?
Sure. I'd love to. Yeah. I think from my perspective, when I start working with clients, one of the things we talk about is how do we build a very prescriptive customer journey for you? But we need to be focusing on kind of that programmatic approach so that we're thinking about building against, I have five pillars, right? And I know you're thematically focused on pillars as well. I talked about one of the five pillars early in the conversation, which is using the voice of the customer to feed what your organization is doing. And I always talk about that first because I think it is very North Star. It is for an organization that's not doing anything today, I'm meeting where you're at and starting to document customer input and feedback, and then figuring out how you can share that systematically through your organization. So it shouldn't just stay in the go-to-market organization. It should feed your marketing and sales efforts, certainly. I think, I write often about how my BFFs in my professional life are sales leaders and marketing leaders. We can't do our jobs without each other. And we need to think through that entire life cycle together. So the voice of the customer is very much one of the first pillars that I work on with clients. And that kind of bleeds into a second pillar, which is around customer advocacy. So how are you taking that voice of the customer and starting to parse out those outcomes and value stories and success, and thinking about how you're leveraging all of those things through the customer life cycle? So in the sales process, or even earlier, as your marketing team is developing different strategies, messages, and position, what kinds of customer content can we use? What kind of stories can we use in the sales process? So how do we match up use cases for our customers to actual success stories and outcomes? So taking the advocacy program and really creating a systematic framework to get customer outcomes documented and feed them back into the go-to-market team, and then feed them out through all of your marketing channels as well. So that's a huge piece that your post-sales function can feed. I'm sure as a sales leader and a revenue leader, you appreciate having new content to talk about.
Oh my goodness, yes. give me information.
Yes. And I think, advocacy, I think, is such an easy win for organizations that might be really intimidated by the post-sales or success process. Customers want to tell their success stories. The advocacy process elevates them as subject matter experts or thought leaders. It puts the spotlight on, them personally and their company. And it just really feeds into that process, because those happy customers, create a referral kind of mechanism for you. So advocacy means a ton of different things. It can mean a one-line testimonial. It can mean a super in-depth case study, and a lot of things in between, right? So thinking about what's attainable for you and your organization from an advocacy perspective. How do we identify great stories, and then what do we do with them? And that's different than just feeding back the voice of the customer into the organization. They're two very distinct pillars.
Awesome.
I think as we're building on our pillars, the next one I really like to focus on is, how do you know what the health of your customer is? So you very early on in our conversation, you talked about the need to have a single source of truth. And many of my favorite RevOps and sales ops leaders that I've worked with, I think would agree with your statement. We need to start to think about how we collect data on our customers from around the organization, whether that be product usage data, engagement data, sentiment data from our calls and emails, and start to put that into a place where we can build some sort of a dashboard to understand if our relationships are healthy or not. And as my clients start on this process, it can feel very gut instinct, right? And that's probably where it starts for most of my clients. We don't have data to tell us that. And that's fine. We start where we are, and then we build to what we need to. So eventually we get to a place where it's less gut instinct and hard data, you know, more hard data, right? So we understand what the actual components are to measure the health of your customers. And that might look different across an agency, a professional services company, or a tech company.
You know, this this makes me recall one of our episodes from season one, and it was, how do you value or rate your customers? Because yes, not every customer is a good customer. And I'm not talking right about them being a necessarily bad customer, but it may not be the right customer for you.
Yes.
Or you may not be the right service provider for them.
Precisely. And yes.
You may be able to fix that relationship, or it may be time to let that relationship go.
A lot of the customer health scores, you know, that process actually begins with lead scoring in the pre-sales phase, right? I actually just had a conversation with one of my clients about that before we were recording this podcast this morning. We were talking about our ICP and, you know, the very distinct components that make up our ideal client profile. Mm-hmm. And then the type of lead scoring that we want to implement, because one of my clients is currently not in a place where they've been scoring their prospects. And that initial lead score should carry through to them becoming a customer someday. And you being able to say, wow, you know what? Leads that we scored a zero, they churn in like 3 months, but leads that we scored a three stay with us for 17 months. Isn't that interesting?
So those zeros cost you money.
They sure do.
They also damage the morale of those employees that worked on them, and they damage your reputation as a company.
Yes, 100%. You are doing yourselves a disservice by making short-term decisions to close business on bad fit customers, period.
Oh, that's a soundbite right there. Oh my gosh. I cannot believe how accurate that is.
It is the source of a lot of heated conversations between success leaders and marketing leaders and sales leaders, no doubt, right? And there are situations when in every organization, and you've been through this, Michelle, like there are situations where we have to close a deal for a short-term gain, but we need to very much recognize that that behavior needs to be limited, and we need to be briefing the full team on what impact that's
going to have. Someone needs to hit a number.
Well, right. So are you going to hit your number on the front end? Or are you going to hit your number on the back end would be my question. So you might hit a quarterly attainment number for new business, but guess what? You're just going to churn that customer out after X number of months or years, depending on, you know, what your renewal cycle looks like. So, and in that time frame, you're going to burn out your success team as well.
And this hits on another one of Michelle's mantras: communication, coordination, collaboration.
Thank you.
Throughout the organization, with everyone having a seat at the table.
Yes. I think it is absolutely critical. And it's one of my pillars, actually, which is around learning and collaboration, because your go-to-market team needs to have a culture of collaboration. I'll use your C, right? But sharing that feedback from your existing customers, from your post-sales team, that feedback needs to be looked at as tests. You know, we're testing and learning here. We're bringing feedback into the organization. We need to be, as a go-to-market team, learning how our customers are interacting with our product or our service. We need to be bringing their voice into our conversations. We need to be featuring their advocacy and success stories. And then guess what? We need to evolve our process and our frameworks. So if we need to change the way we're scoring leads, or change what our ICP looks like down the line, or create different use cases, or evolve our product, then we need to do that. That culture of continuous learning within, particularly in my world, within the go-to-market team, but then also your wider organization, is absolutely critical, because it affects your bottom line, right? We have a company that's there to make money. So that's we want goal. we want to maximize the money at every part. So if you're talking about the whole sort of brand, you know, demand expand, right? Expand should make you money. Post sales should make you money. For sure. My fifth pillar is one we've talked about, which is automation. So it's your systems internally and how you're leveraging them. So it goes back to using a great CRM and then thinking about the balance of in post sales, human versus machine, and how do you automate low value tasks so that your team can focus on the high impact moments that need to be run by actual humans. And right. In post sales, I think that's so important. It, you know, the go-to-market side of the business is a heavy burnout side of the business, no matter if you're in sales or in marketing or in success, but particularly the emotions that are involved with the post-sales process and managing customers. And when a great customer of yours that you were certain, you know, had a high health score and was totally with you chooses not to renew. That's a hugely emotional process, I think, for people. And really that automation helps to keep customers on track. And when those customers are on track, then you can really come to them in those high impact moments so that you can be proving the ROI of your product and underscoring value.
Well, if you're doing customer success right, it should never be a surprise to you that a customer is leaving.
Nope. I think what we find really challenging is, you've heard this before in the sales process, that budget is never really a factor for renewal, right? It always comes down to value. And if the value was not proven or received, you're going to hear things like, well, I can't afford it. Well, you can't afford it because there's something more valuable ahead of you in that budget planning process, right? So those are the five areas that I really focus on post-sales. And that really looks different for different companies, right? So some companies might be ahead in certain areas, and some companies might really be at that, you know, place where they're just transitioning from founder-led sales into hiring their first sales leader, hiring their first marketing leader, figuring out what to do when they have all the closed one bells going off, and now, holy crap, they've got to onboard and take care of clients. And what do they do then?
Well, it's often helpful, though, especially in those startups in second stage where the leadership team really is embedded in the company. Get somebody that's objective, impartial, that's outside the daily operations and conversations to just assess where things are, to do an audit, and then say, okay, well, this truly is our current state. And if our desired state is over here, What do we need to do to bridge that gap? Right. You don't necessarily have to bring in someone from the outside to fix it, because that may not be in the budget, but you need an objective opinion.
Right.
If you and your team are the one that got to the current state, oftentimes you won't recognize that you're not where you need to be.
I think particularly founders, you know, whose blood, sweat, and tears are involved in the product or the service, that's where I think a fractional go-to-market leader can come in and look at things and say, wow, you know, I think collaboratively, often we see a sales leader who is crushing it, right? Signing new logos, bringing in a huge pipeline, and then we're churning customers out faster than we can sign those new logos. And that's a big trigger for a client to say, I think we might need somebody to look at the post-sales process. What are we doing or not doing once we sign new business? Why is this happening? And are the go-to-market leaders actually working together? Or is sales over here doing their thing and marketing's over here doing their thing? And then you've got kind of a few people who kind of sort of have the responsibility for taking care of clients, but don't really have a process. And I think that those are always areas to consider, because at the end of the day, you've gone through an entire sales cycle with that client and used a lot of resources doing that. Marketing resources, sales resources, depending on how long your sales cycle is and what your average contract value is, that could be a lot of resources.
Right.
You want to think about how your infrastructure will support the customer post sales. It's just a no-brainer.
Absolutely. Well, I am so happy you were able to join us today. You shared so much value that is going to help all of our listeners grow their companies. And as they do so and they start thinking about building those pillars of success, don't wait until you've got a big customer base to start thinking about, okay, I've got to have customer success.
Right.
Think about that before you have a customer. And if you already have customers, get that customer success plan in place. Absolutely. Yeah. It's critical.
Yeah, it really is critical. And you're totally right. We could be talking about 10 customers or we could be talking about 1,000 customers. The process needs to be in place. It needs to be repeatable. And it needs to focus on how you are anticipating the customer's needs before they have them, and really bringing them along their journey in a very prescriptive and strategic way.
And it will need to evolve with your company as your company scales.
Yes.
Yep, so Kelly exactly. Olson with KO Knows Consulting, thank you so much for joining us.
You are so welcome, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You can find the Go, Go, Grow podcast on YouTube and all your favorite podcast outlets. You can also find us on LinkedIn, where you can also see our office hours. We do that at least a couple times a month. Please follow us on your favorite podcast outlet. Follow us on LinkedIn. Share your comments. Ask your questions. Rate us a 5. And share us with anyone that you know who could find value. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time.